Are you ready to be who your soul wants you to be? Are you ready to create a joyful life? You came here to make a difference in the world, and you can do it. We can show you how. Move beyond the basics of health and wealth and into a life of lasting joy with Lynn McGonigal, the founder and teaching channel of the Lightworkers Healing Method, right here on the Dream Vision 7 Radio Network. Listen in as Lynn and her inspiring guests talk about what really matters in life and be who your soul wants you to be.
Welcome, friends. Welcome to Be Who Your Soul Wants You to Be. I'm Lynn McGonigal, your host. You're listening to a live Dream Vision 7 Radio Network broadcast at 1510 AM, NBC Sports Radio Boston. We're heard live every second Sunday at 6 p.m. You can also tune into our show on our station, Dream Vision 7 Radio, every week on Thursday and Friday at 5 p.m. Eastern and 5 a.m. Eastern for our European friends. To learn more and for a full station schedule, go to dreamvision7radio.com. Friends, we're here today to talk about creating relationships that support both partners in living their life purpose and fulfilling their creative destinies. And we're really honored to have Dr. Gay Hendricks here with us today. Gay has served for more than 35 years as one of the major contributors to the fields of relationship transformation and body-mind therapies, along with his wife, Dr. Kathleen Hendricks, who I believe goes by Katie. Gay is the co-author of many books, including Conscious Living, Conscious Loving, Five Wishes, and Conscious Living was your book, wasn't it, Gay? Not a co-authored experience?
Yes, that was mine.
So sorry. So you and Katie co-authored books including Conscious Loving and Five Wishes, but you were the solo author of several other books. You're the author of 33 books, including Conscious Living, The Big Leap, and The Corporate Mystic. Dr. Hendricks received his Ph.D. in counseling psychology from Stanford in 1974. After a 21-year career as a professor of counseling psychology at the University of Colorado, he and Kathleen founded the Hendricks Institute, which is based in Ojai, California, and offers seminars worldwide. Recently, he's also been active in creating new forms of conscious entertainment, along with Stephen Simon. In 2003, Dr. Hendricks founded the Spiritual Cinema Circle, which distributes inspirational movies to subscribers in more than 70 countries around the world. He's appeared on more than 500 radio and television shows, including Oprah, CNN, CNBC, 48 Hours, and others, and we're honored to have him with us today. Welcome, Gay.
Thank you very much, Lynn. Great being with you.
Wonderful. You know, one thing I've noticed is that both of our core messages begin with themes about integrity or honesty or telling the truth. Is that something that we could begin with today?
Yes, absolutely. The whole subject of transparency, how transparent we are to ourselves and how transparent we are in our relationships, makes a huge difference in the quality of life.
Can you go into that a little bit?
Sure, because, you know, a lot of times in the growing up process, you have to assume different masks and acts to get along. Like with my granddad, for example, he was completely interested in sports. He lived next door to me my whole childhood, and so he and I used to talk constantly. And so I kind of had one personality for granddad, which was all sports-oriented. My grandmother, though, couldn't stand sports. She hated to talk about sports, but her obsession was the Civil War. She had been kind of a grand dame, a Southern belle, you know, and then the South got vanquished, and she lost her way of life. And so she kind of spent her life pining for the old days and the Civil War days and things like that. And so I learned to kind of have a different persona for her. So that's just an example, though, of the different things we do to learn how to relate to different people growing up. And some of those things later on cause us to be less than transparent to ourselves. Because if you have to pretend, for example, not to be scared around somebody, like with my brother, for example, it was important for him, he was kind of a macho teenager. And I remember one time crying because I got hit by a baseball out when we were playing baseball. And I was only 8 years old or so, and he was a teenager, like 16 or so. And I remember him really giving me, you know, like, don't do that. You know, you don't cry in this neighborhood. You can't admit you're weak or people will take advantage of you. And so he, I guess it was a really self-protective thing. But later on in relationships, it really became costly to me because I was so good at hiding all of my feelings. So I didn't tell my wife when I was scared at one point, you know, 30 years ago. I didn't tell her when I was angry. I would store it up and then cash it in, you know. So because I was not transparent to how I actually felt inside, I couldn't actually get hold of it and express. Like for many years of my life, I would say I was angry about something, but then later on I realized that I was really sad or scared about it underneath. But being angry was the only one I sort of had permission to let myself feel. I didn't really give myself permission to be transparent to things I felt sad about or scared about or hurt about in there. And so the lack of transparency in relationships is probably right up there at the top of the most common things that people say when they leave a relationship. One of them is, he or she would never tell me what was really going on inside. That's one of the top three complaints that I've heard in working with about 4,500 couples now, is one of the big complaints is, and it's often, frankly, uttered by a woman about the man she's with, it's something like, he won't ever tell me how he feels. And so a lot of people kind of put down men because of that, but, you know, let's have some compassion and realize that I know at least I, as a man, spent a lot of my childhood getting told not to have feelings, you know, or not to show feelings. And so it makes it kind of difficult now, but I fortunately turned a corner on that, especially in my relationship with Katie over the past 33 years now, that I had to get much better at just communicating whatever I felt, whether it was I'm sad or I'm angry or I don't know what to do right now or whatever the thing was, just to be open and honest about it instead of trying to conceal it all the time.
Yes. So many people are stuck in that trap. They're not in tune with themselves. They're not transparent to themselves. And then, of course, they can't be transparent in a relationship. So Gay, how did you get out of the trap?
Well, I had the great gift of an accident that I would now call an inspired accident that kind of gave me a wake-up moment in my life. And I'll have to take you back almost 1969, so I don't even have my calculator at hand here. That must be over 40 years ago now. And here's what happened, Lynn. I was very much out of touch not only with my feelings, but I was out of touch with who I was and how I needed to take care of my body. By the time I was 24 years old, I had a 2 or 3 pack-a-day cigarette habit.
Wow.
I weighed 140 pounds more than I weighed this morning.
Wow.
I was, in other words, I weighed more than 320 pounds on a body that, like right now at my healthy weight, I'm about 180 pounds. So I'm about 6 feet tall. So the 140 extra pounds were a living testament to me being not in touch with myself. I was also in a really toxic relationship that I'd been in for a couple of years, and I was only in it because I didn't have enough money to get out of it. I didn't have enough money to find some other place to live, and so I was kind of enduring the hell of a bad relationship. And I'll tell you, one thing I've learned is a great relationship is heaven on earth, but a bad relationship is all I need of hell on earth. Because living in that kind of environment every day, it was just tremendously toxic. And I was also, I worked at a job I didn't like. I didn't like the car I drove. You know, everything was wrong with my life. And so fortunately, I got the great gift of a wake-up moment that reconnected me with my inner spirituality, for one thing. I went out for a walk. I just had a big argument with my then partner, Linda, and I went out. It was a winter day in January, and I went out for a walk to kind of clear my head. And I was walking along this lonely New England country road. There wasn't anybody else around, and I slipped on some snow that was covering an ice puddle, and I stepped on the ice puddle and my feet shot out from under me. I whacked the back of my head on the ice. And I'd always seen those cartoons of people hitting their heads and seeing stars, but I actually saw stars. It was that moment of wow. But fortunately, I didn't knock myself completely out, but I now call it an out of Hendrix experience, because I was out of my normal version of myself for about 2 minutes, but I wasn't blacked out. What happened was, as I was laying there on the ice, I had this inner vision of being able to see down through to the center of myself. And when I saw down through to the center of myself, I realized that what I really was pure consciousness. I was spirit with a bunch of other things wrapped around it. That what I really was a spiritual being, not a 320-pound meat being. Although I was that too, but at the deepest part of myself, I was actually a living representative of the spiritual aspect of the universe, and that we all are. And I had this vision in this moment of how my inner consciousness was connected to everyone else's inner consciousness, so that we are all one in this process of waking up to our inner divinity. And this happened to me during this 2 minutes, and as I was laying there on the ice, the other thing that happened is I saw down through all these different levels of myself. Like, I saw that there was this whole level of me that was all the feelings that I never talked about that were there, but I just didn't know about them because I had buried them so deeply. And I realized there were things I was scared about that I never talked about, and there was things I was deeply sad about that I'd never mentioned to another human being, and that I had this whole world of emotional secrets, basically, inside myself that were even secrets to myself most of the time, up until that moment, really, because I hadn't known they were all in there. And I realized that I did all of this overeating and smoking and everything to try to not experience what was down in there.
Yeah.
But for that 2 minutes, I experienced all that stuff, and I realized, wow, that is all me too. That, you know, here's this part of me that's both spiritual, but then here's this other part of me that's trying to kill myself. And so what an amazing thing it is to be a human being and to be able to embrace both the divinity of ourselves and the craziness of ourselves at the same time. But in that moment, I was able to do that. And here's the thing, though, Lynn, as I was coming out of that, as I was kind of sitting up and rubbing the back of my head and saying, wow, I was coming back into my 320-pound body, and I could feel myself wanting a cigarette. But here's what I did. I made an inner commitment. I said, I commit to living with the awareness of that spiritual state of consciousness all the time in my life. That's what I want, and I'll do anything that's necessary to do that. And so as I came back out into my regular life, I walked back home, and the hardest thing really after that was finding out how to do that in real life, how to keep that alive in my life. And one thing I started doing differently was eating only foods that fed that spiritual part of me rather than feeding my old 320-pound body. And so I stopped eating all the things that had made me fat and started eating things like, I remember I ate blueberries a lot for some reason. I fixated on blueberries.
Yeah.
But I would just get these packages of them at the store. And whatever called to me that said, this will feed my spirit, I would eat. And so for the next year, over the next year, I lost 120 pounds.
Yeah.
And just doing these unusual things, you know, that I'd never done before. And also that year, I learned how to meditate and did things that allowed me to feel that spiritual state of consciousness in regular life without bashing my head on the ground.
Right. Right. And so during that time that you were changing out of your old habits and into your new habits, were there times where it felt like it was impossible and that backsliding was inevitable, or did that never rise up for you?
Oh, there was tremendous backsliding. And Well, I'll tell you, a particularly awful one is I had lost about 35 pounds, and people were beginning to notice. I remember one of my friends said, "Wow, you're losing a lot of weight, aren't you?" And, you know, I was still weighed 290 pounds maybe, but, you know, compared to the 320 pounds, I was beginning to look less of me. And so that kind of went to my head in a way, and I was walking past an ice cream store in Cambridge, Massachusetts. It was the Brigham's Ice Cream Store. I don't even know if they're still there, but it was this fabulous ice cream.
What street?
Oh, gosh, they were all over the place. But this one was close to Harvard Square.
Yes.
And so I was just down there for the weekend visiting somebody. And so I stopped, and I saw this person inside. There was two people, actually, eating this huge chocolate fudge sundae. And I completely lost it. It's like I went into a trance, and I went into the store, and I got that ice cream sundae, you know, with extra whipped cream and bananas and hot fudge sauce and everything. It was just gigantic. It probably had about 3,000 calories to it. It could have fed a family of four for a week, probably. But I ate this thing. I just glub, 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 glub. I don't think I ever took my face out of it hardly.
Did you taste it?
No, I don't think I even tasted it. I think I was in this trance of suddenly my old self-destruct programs had grabbed back a hold of me, almost like a test, you know?
Yeah.
And the thing was, within about 20 minutes of eating that sundae, I felt about as sick as I had ever felt in my life. And it really only made me do that one big time. There were other times when I kind of would slip off it for a few days and kind of be stable and that kind of thing. But I remember that one big moment of self-sabotage and how much it cost me. It's probably like some person that, you know, hasn't drunk alcohol or something for, you know, 6 months and then takes a drink. They would probably get very, very ill, and that's kind of what happened to me.
Yes. Yes. And so as you were feeling sick, were you aware that there was something going on, or was it just after the fact that you got clear about that?
Well, when I suddenly felt the sickness come on me as I was still walking in Cambridge, I had to bend over, actually, because I felt so sick suddenly to my stomach. And I think it was at that moment I realized, oh, my gosh, I have just sabotaged myself. I was beginning to feel so good, and people were beginning to notice. And I don't know how to accept that about myself.
Oh, this is great. Go on.
Yeah. And so I think that's, you know, those are things that in The Big Leap, my book, The Big Leap, I call upper limits problems. You know, things are going well, and then you find some old way of sabotaging yourself. And I kind of think of them like cosmic tests in a way, that they're going to be there until you can make it clear to the universe that you're sincere about your commitments.
Yes.
There's one thing for me to make a commitment to feeling my spiritual essence in my life, but it's another thing to make good on that commitment, right?
Right.
And that's where human beings often go astray. And so what saved me that year, though, Lynn, what really saved me was the contact with that spiritual essence of myself. Once I felt that, I realized I would never be satisfied again until I had a way of feeling that all the time. And do we have a moment for another story? I want to tell another.
In about a minute and a half, we're going to have to go to a break. So can we save it until after the break and start with it right after the break?
Absolutely. I must have picked up on that telepathically after about 79,000 interviews that we were needing to take a break here soon. Yes, when we come back, I want to tell you about the thing that happened the day after regarding a person I met and a book he recommended and a whole bunch of magic that unfolded right after that. And it speaks to the issue of once you make a big new positive commitment, if you allow it to, the universe will just come in to support that every possible way.
Yes. The moment one definitely commits oneself, then providence moves to all sorts of things happen that would never otherwise have occurred. That's from W.H. Murray, a Scottish mountain climber. So friends, in just a minute, we're going to a break. You're listening to Be Who Your Soul Wants You to Be. I'm your host, Lynn McGonigal, and we're here today with our fabulous guest, Dr. Gay Hendricks. You can find out more about him and his work at hendricks.com, hendricks.com. And, of course, about the Lightworkers Healing Method at lightworkersmethod.com. Friends, you can be who your soul wants you to be. In just a few minutes, we'll be back for more with Dr. Gay Hendricks.
Are you ready to be who your soul wants you to be? Join Lynn McGonigal, the founder of the Lightworkers Healing Method, as she and her amazing guests show you how to move into a life of lasting joy. Miracles happen every second Sunday at 6 p.m. right here on the Dream Vision 7 Radio Network. Hasn't your soul already waited long enough?
Dr. Bernie Siegel on Mind Health Matters, all part of the Dream Vision 7 Radio Network. Bernie will draw from his inspirational personal journey, offering us special nuggets of his sacred wisdom. Listen in as Bernie reminds us to be fully engaged in life.
Are you a healing practitioner or a serious spiritual seeker? Do you want to be who your soul wants you to be and help others do the same? You can learn angelically guided energy healing with the Lightworkers Healing Method. Because its goal is to align us with our soul's life purpose, LHM is both a healing system and a spiritual growth vehicle. You can return to your natural state of joy and fulfillment and help others do the same. It's a skill, not a gift, and nothing is off limits. Are you ready to be who your soul wants you to be? Come to lightworkersmethod.com. As taught at Kripalu and the Institute of Noetic Sciences, course credits are available.
Take a journey to a place of the divine love within with Deborah Beauvais on the Love by Intuition show, Saturdays 2 to 3 p.m. Our message is love in the purest form. The light within us all is a guide to recall our beginning, to learn to love self and humankind, to feel the higher power of our own divinity. To attract love, one needs to be love. Saturday 2 to 3 p.m., all part of the Dream Vision 7 Radio Network.
Join CPA, personal financial specialist Jane Honick, on Your Money and Your Life and create a new life with money, because it's not about the numbers. It's about your state of mind. Jane Honick will help you master the beliefs that drive not only your financial life, but all the areas of your life that matter. With new awareness and a positive attitude, you'll be on your way to creating a life of greater prosperity. This show is part of the Dream Vision 7 Radio Network.
Edicia is a U.S. nonprofit dedicated to the dream of ending childhood malnutrition for millions of children around the world. Through the manufacture of Plumpy Nut and other nutrient-rich, peanut-based, ready-to-use foods, Edicia has already delivered life and hope to nearly 1 million children in over 26 developing countries. To find out how you can join Edicia's dream of ending childhood malnutrition, please visit ediciaglobal.org.
Greenlock is the place to go for horse therapy you should know. We use the horse, they do the trick, to help you talk and walk and skip. The horse's movement builds your muscle. It also makes you laugh and chuckle. To do our job, your help we need. To run the farm and buy our feed. To help us out, just double click on greenlock.org. Do it quick.
Welcome to In Spirit with Maria Halverson. I'm Maria Halverson, your host. In Spirit comes to you every third Sunday of the month at 6 p.m. to bring you stories that will inspire you to open your hearts and minds to the afterlife. In Spirit is part of the Dream Vision 7 Radio Network.
This is Dream Vision 7 Radio Network, uniting mankind with universal love. Our shows are created from the heart, bringing each listener to a place of divine enlightenment. Breathe, relax, and enjoy. Let life flow.
Welcome back, friends. You're listening to a Dream Vision 7 radio live broadcast here at 1510 AM, NBC Sports Radio Boston. I'm Lynn McGonigal, host of Be Who Your Soul Wants You to Be, and we're here today talking with Dr. Gay Hendricks about living fulfilling lives that fulfill our destinies, and especially how that applies to relationships. So, Gay, right before the break, you were saying that you had a wonderful story for us, something that happened the day after you hit your head on the ice, how the universe moved to support you.
Yes, I made that commitment coming out of that experience on the ice to do everything I could to feel that spiritual inner consciousness all the time. And it was fading out. I couldn't feel it anymore. And so I kind of launched this thought that, okay, maybe through the power of my commitment, I can make that happen. And so the next day, a friend of mine called me and said that he was coming up to where I lived in New Hampshire at the time, and he was coming over past my house because he was going to visit one of his old professors from Harvard. And the professor's father lived up the road from where I did on this beautiful estate. I didn't know this at the time. I'd never even heard of the person. So Neil Marinello was my friend, and he stopped by and picked me up. Oh, he asked me if I wanted to come because his professor had just come back from India and was doing some unusual new stuff, and he wanted to hear about it. And so I said, okay, sure. And so we drove over there and went onto the grounds of this beautiful estate on Webster Lake in New Hampshire. And who should it be but Ram Dass?
That's what I was just thinking. Oh, how fabulous. And he was freshly back?
Yes, he had just come back from India, and he had his robes on, and he was surrounded by all these lovely young people all wearing robes. He had about maybe six or eight assistants with him, sort of devotees, you know. And they came and offered us fruit. Anyway, we sat in this little circle with Ram Dass for about 3 hours, and he just talked for 3 hours straight and without any notes or anything. And I was so amazed by that. I was a teacher in a school for delinquent boys at the time, and it didn't involve much teaching. It involved mostly kind of riding herd on these wild and crazy kids. But I had been trained as a teacher, and I had never seen anybody speak for, you know, even a half an hour without notes. And here was Ram Dass. He would just stop and now and then and take a few breaths and kind of tune in, and then he would launch off again and talk some more. And it was kind of mesmerizing, actually, and what he was saying, a lot of what he was saying sounded kind of crazy to me, but it also had a familiar sound to it, too. And because of this experience I just had the day before. So after he was finished talking, I went over and asked him point blank. You know, I didn't beat around the bush. I said, look, I just had this experience yesterday, but I don't know what to do with it. What do you think I ought to do? Just take a look at me and say, what should I do to really make this come alive in my life? And he said, well, what you should do is you should do some meditation and breathing exercises. And I said, breathing exercises? What do you mean by that? Because that was totally foreign to me. I'd heard of yoga, but, you know, the idea of breathing exercises, that was complete mystery to me. I was an English literature major in college, so I didn't know anything about this stuff. And so I said, where would I get something like that? And he said, well, just kind of stay open and something will come to you. And I said, okay, you know. But then what happened was I went to the grocery store. And remember now, this is 1969. And so as I was checking out of the grocery store, I looked over to there was a little rack of paperback books that sat on the counter where I was checking out. And in those days, I don't know if you were alive back then, Liz, probably
not, yes.
But paperback books were either 95 cents or 75 cents. You know, they kind of had that price range. Well, this one was a 95-cent one, meaning it was at the top range of the price. But it was called Yoga, Youth, and Reincarnation by Jess Stern. And I don't know, maybe you can still get the book, I don't know. But what it was, I picked it up. And what it was basically a whole book of yoga and breathing and meditation exercises.
Wow. Thank you, Spirit.
And I was just, I remember just kind of standing there with my jaw open saying, my God, what if this stuff really works, you know? What if just by being open to Spirit, you suddenly kind of get on a new set of trolley tracks that's taking you off in a whole new direction? And so over the next 24 hours, I did as many of those exercises in that book as I possibly could. And I happened to be by myself on this one particular day. My partner was off visiting her mother in Maine. And so I just stayed up, you know, like past midnight, continuing to do the exercises. And by about 2 a.m., I got to the meditation chapter. And after doing all the yoga and breathing and stuff like that, and I did the meditation. And sure enough, right there, all the time had been that spiritual essence feeling I'm talking about. And there it came right back in meditation, and I realized I didn't have to hit my head on the ground. I could just tune in a certain way, and it would take me there. And so I've been a daily meditator now for, 40 years. And so I just, you know, it's so important. And I also do breathing processes every day, too. In fact, I may be one of the only human beings on Earth that's written three different books about breathing. If you can find another one, let me know.
That's an important topic, and you've got me beat. I've only got maybe 22 years into meditation, daily meditation, but it's a wonderful gift to self.
It really is. One of my students got out his calculator. He's a statistics guy, and he figured out I'd had something like a 13,000 or 14,000-day meditation streak going since way back there, you know, 40 years ago.
So did he continue to figure out how much time you'd spent, how many years so far spent in meditation, solid years?
Oh, that's a good question. I'll have to do that sometime.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah, yeah. Go back to him, get him to do that. So can we come back to what you said? You said something like, is it possible if we open to Spirit that we somehow get on a new set of trolley tracks?
Yes.
Can we talk about that?
Yeah, I think that what I've found is that, see, there's one set of trolley tracks that are created by your old programming, your old conditioning. You know, that's just the way we find ourselves, that by the time you get up into, like, adult life, for sure, you have already had tons of unconscious training, years of unconscious training in how not to do good relationships, as well as whatever you've learned about, and that's what makes relationship therapy with people so tricky because when you work on your relationships, it's not like learning something brand new. That's part of it, but you have to unlearn all of the old unconscious negative stuff that you've been doing that you just picked up that you don't even want to do it. Nobody ever chose it. You know, you just realized that, you know, you'd been around maybe people that handled their feelings in a certain way. You know, in one house, people blow up and scream at each other. In the next house, people have exactly the same emotion, but they stuff it down in their stomach and go to the doctor a lot. And then the next house up the road, they have exactly the same emotions, but they go out and exercise vigorously. So everybody's got their own way of dealing with different things. And by the time you get up into adult life, I know I had all these programs about, you know, don't feel your feelings, don't communicate your feelings, don't ever talk about what's on your mind, you know, all of these old things I had to unlearn.
Right. So how did you support yourself through the process of unlearning? Because, the backsliding would kick in, wouldn't it?
Well, it depends. Yeah, yes, the backsliding tends to kick in. But what I did was I just got busy doing a whole bunch of things that seemed to feed my spirit. You know, I went out and looked for a new job. I went out and looked for a better job that fed my spirit a little bit better. So I started doing a whole bunch of practical things. I saved up some money and then got out of the relationship I was in. And so one thing after the other, I just gradually kind of got out from underneath them and tried to move on from them. That's not always easy, but, you know, it's fortunately, it's kind of like the way I look at it is if you set your intentions right, they can kind of serve like the automatic pilot mechanisms on an airplane. You know, like my wife just flew out to Honolulu on Monday to do a few days of consulting work out there. I dropped her off at the airport, and she flew out there, and, you know, the plane you fly there, the pilot sets an automatic pilot mechanism for Honolulu, and then when the plane drifts off, it recorrects a little bit and corrects back in the other direction. Then it drifts off in another direction and recorrects. So it gets to Honolulu by being wrong most of the time.
But just like us.
Yeah, just like us. And that's why the intentions are so important, you know, to really set good intentions and also feed your intentions so that you feed what's spiritual in you. You know, most of us don't even have a budget for our spiritual development every year. You know, you might have a budget for your gas bill. You might have a budget for your housing. But a lot of us don't even think of what's the budget for feeding our spirit. And it's got to be either time or money or time and money, because like for me, I feed mine with an hour a day of meditation. That doesn't cost me any money, but it did cost me some money to go learn how to do it and go, you know, take training and things like that. So it's a combination of your dedication and also your energy in the form of either time or money or both.
I agree, and I would love to talk a little bit more about this, but unfortunately we're going to have to go to another break in just a minute. So friends, be back in just a minute. We're going to continue this talk about feeding our spirit, helping ourselves, supporting ourselves in being who we came here to be, fulfilling our creative destinies. You're listening to Dr. Gay Hendricks. Again, his website is hendricks.com, HENDRICKS.com. And of course, I'm Lynn McGonigal, and our website is lightworkersmethod.com. Friends, come back in just a few minutes with Dr. Gay Hendricks.
Are you ready to be who your soul wants you to be? Join Lynn McGonigal, the founder of the Lightworkers Healing Method, as she and her amazing guests show you how to move into a life of lasting joy. Miracles happen every second Sunday at 6 p.m. right here on the Dream Vision 7 Radio Network. Hasn't your soul already waited long enough? Are you a healing practitioner or a serious spiritual seeker? Do you want to be who your soul wants you to be and help others do the same? You can learn angelically guided energy healing with the Lightworkers Healing Method. Because its goal is to align us with our soul's life purpose, LHM is both a healing system and a spiritual growth vehicle. You can return to your natural state of joy and fulfillment and help others do the same. It's a skill, not a gift, and nothing is off limits. Are you ready to be who your soul wants you to be? Come to lightworkersmethod.com. As taught at Kripalu and the Institute of Noetic Sciences, course credits are available.
The 5th Annual Discover You Wellness Expo, the largest wellness expo in Rhode Island, Saturday, April 20th and Sunday, April 21st at the Twin River Event Center, Lincoln, Rhode Island. Discover the possibilities for a happier and healthier you. Visit over 100 exhibitor booths. Attend a full lineup of seminars featuring Roland Comtois, Wendy Trubo, MD, and Carrie Cudmore. Two-day admission is $15 and $12 in advance. Discover You Wellness Expo. Visit Discover You Expo.com. Dream Vision 7 Radio Network is a proud sponsor of the Discover You Wellness Expo for the fifth consecutive year.
Take a journey to a place of the divine love within with Deborah Beauvais on the Love by Intuition show, Saturdays 2 to 3 p.m. Our message is love in the purest form. The light within us all is a guide to recall our beginning, to learn to love self and humankind, to feel the higher power of our own divinity. To attract love, one needs to be love. Saturday, 2 to 3 p.m., all part of the Dream Vision 7 Radio Network.
Join us every second and fourth Sunday at 7 p.m. for Living on Purpose with Carolyn Romano, where we explore the mysteries, meaning, and sometimes madness of life. Let's figure out together the ways we're meant to serve and become the fullest expressions of our most authentic selves. Let's figure out together how to create lives of balance, abundance, and joy. This program is part of the Dream Vision 7 Radio Network.
Welcome back, friends. You're listening to a Dream Vision 7 radio live broadcast here at 1510 AM, NBC Sports Radio Boston. I'm Lynn McGonigal, host of Be Who Your Soul Wants You to Be, and we're here today with Dr. Gay Hendricks talking about awakening our spiritual selves, awakening elements inside of ourselves that are waiting to be expressed. We were talking at the break about awakening creativity. Gay, would you be willing to discuss that right now?
Absolutely. One of the things that Katie and I, my wife Katie and I, we've been together 33 years now, and one of the things that we've noticed is that one of the things that really keeps relationships alive, it could be a close love relationship at home or work relationships or whatever relationships you're in, one of the things that really keeps them alive is the creativity development of both people. And so one of the things that people in troubled relationships often say is that they feel like they're not using their creative energy, that their creative energy is getting squandered in repetitive arguments and things like that. Katie and I started working on what would really keep people's creativity alive. And in the result of that is both of us developed these creative things that we hadn't been developing before. For example, 3 years ago, I got fascinated with writing a mystery novel. And so I created a mystery character that I enjoyed hanging around with for a couple of hours a day. He's a Tibetan Buddhist private detective in Los Angeles, and he goes by the nickname Ten. His real name is Tenzing Norbu, but he's nicknamed Ten. And so all of the books now, I've published two of them so far, or Hay House has published two of them so far. The first one is called The First Rule of Ten, and the second one just came out. It's called The Second Rule of Ten. And we have four of them in the works, and also a movie under development. And so it's been, you know, just out of making a decision to get more creative at midlife and beyond, it started happening. And so one of the things that I want to really impress upon people, no matter if you're 50 or 60 or 70 or 80 or 18, is that your creativity is something that needs daily feeding. And one of the remarkable things that Katie and I discovered in working with couples with this is it only takes about 10 minutes a day in the beginning to get your creativity really juicily flowing. So to get the creative juices flowing, all it takes is 10 minutes of dedication to whatever creative path you've chosen. So for me, just working on my mystery novel every day for a little while, pretty soon I was working on it 2 or 3 hours a day. And then pretty soon a publisher got interested. And next thing I know, I'm a best-selling mystery novelist. And whoever would have imagined that, you know, to hit the bestseller list in a whole different field than I've ever been in before. So what I say, though, is whether you're creating bestsellers or just making a darn good soup or coaching your kid's soccer team, whatever it is that brings forth your creative juices. So that, to me, is one of the greatest things about human beings, is that we can reawaken our creativity, even if it's been kind of lost off in the shadows for a while.
Yes, it's true. And we can do this at any age, can't we? We're never too old, right?
No. And I've had clients in here who were in their 70s and even one in their 80s, and we've all got the same problem, really, because I was in here working with an 18-year-old the other day. And we've all got the same problem in a way, which is how to access our true genius, how to really get in touch with the hidden genius inside and make it very visible to the world.
Yes. And what do you tell people? What is your advice there?
Well, my advice is to think of it as like breathing. Like, for example, you can just barely sustain yourself if you take little tiny shallow breaths. But if you take rich, deep, easy breath in all the way and a deep, easy breath out all the way, you use the fullness of yourself. And I like to think that our creativity works that way, too. You take a big in-breath of, who am I and what do I have deeply within me to share? And then you take an out-breath, here's what I have to share. And so the deeper and more easy you can make your in-breath, the deeper and easier you can make your out-breath. You can express more if you breathe in more. Elizabeth Barrett Browning had this great quotation a couple of hundred years ago. She said that those who breathe most air live most life.
Yeah, that's beautiful. That's beautiful. And so in many schools of meditation, they'll say focus on the in-breath. In other schools, they'll say focus on the exhale. Some say let your breath occur naturally. Others say let your breath be deep and pure, etc. And what have you found about styles of breathing? Does everyone find their own style?
Well, you need to learn how to breathe the way nature intended you to breathe. And unfortunately, breathing problems are international rampant catastrophe at present because of so many people being in war zones and so many people being in places where pollution is making it difficult for them to breathe, and in addition to other traumas of life. So what happens is, like in my book, Conscious Breathing, I devote whole chapters of showing with illustrations and everything how to get back in touch with your own natural breathing once nature has that nature is given to you. And we all have that capacity, even if our breath has been completely turned upside down by the traumas of life. And so one of the things that I think, like I just finished 2 weeks ago doing a 5-day intensive here with advanced students, teaching them all the techniques of breath work that I use. And so you can even, I mean, I go for 5 straight days teaching people about breathing, and we still just barely scratch the surface of what can really help people. It's one of the most exciting areas of life. I teach people what are the absolute essentials, and I'm very eager to now have the next generation come back and say, okay, here's some more things we've learned. There have been about 3,000 studies now on the value of breathing and breath work in healing everything from asthma to headaches to all sorts of different things, as well as just helping you feel good and do better at athletics and so forth. But the important thing is that you make a little dedicated practice each day of investing some time in helping your breathing come alive. And so if you go to my website, hendricks.com, you can see free breathing exercises that we've posted there that you can find that have a videos of me breathing so you can see what I'm talking about.
That's wonderful. It's really wonderful. And from my perspective, because I teach energy healing, energy is the subtlest form of breath. And so as we learn to focus on our breath, we come to that point that we're ready to then start to focus on the energy flow that's behind the breath or within the breath or underneath the breath, depending on how you think about it. So, friends, we're coming down to just the last minute or two. Gay, do you have anything, any final words for our friends today?
At the bottom of things that inhibit us and hold us back is usually something about ourselves that we haven't thoroughly loved and accepted. And so one of the first big arts of life, arts of living, conscious living, is to open up and accept the magnificence of yourself, including everything. Because almost all self-esteem problems come from a difficulty in learning to really love ourselves. And so because we feel unlovable down in there, we create situations that confirm our unlovability out in the world. And so a good place to start is just take 10 seconds and thoroughly love yourself for everything you are and everything you are not. And out of that love grows a new awareness of yourself as a whole being that's actually connected to the universe and to other people at the same time.
That is beautiful. Thank you. Thank you so much, Gay. I've really, really enjoyed talking with you today. Friends, I hope you've enjoyed our show today as much as I have, this talk about connecting with our creative selves and opening up and expressing who we truly are in the world. We're just all grateful to Dr. Hendricks, Dr. Gay Hendricks. Again, you can find out about his work at Hendricks.com, H-E-N-D-R-I-C-K-S.com. I've read about those two mystery novels, The First Rule of Ten and Second Rule of Ten. It's in some of my Buddhist magazines. I read the book reviews, and they were well-reviewed. So, friends, perhaps you would want to look into that. Now, again, I'm Lynn McGonigal, your host here at Be Who Your Soul Wants You to Be, and you can find out about my work, The Lightworkers Healing Method, at lightworkersmethod.com. Join us next month on Be Who Your Soul Wants You to Be as we welcome Alan Cohen, author of 24 popular inspirational books, including the classic, Are You As Happy As Your Dog? I absolutely love that title. We'll be talking about living from the heart. Again, thank you so much, Dr. Hendricks. It was a real joy having you here on Be Who Your Soul Wants You to Be. Friends, until we talk again, walk in light, live in light, be the light that you came here to be. Shine it into the world. You can do it. Don't be afraid. You can do it. You can do it. You can do it. Remember that, friends. You can do it. Now, we have one moment for breathing here. So just as Dr. Hendricks was telling us, let's take a moment right now and connect with our breath and just for a moment notice our bodies and notice our breathing and be present. If there's any pain or tightness, pressure or discomfort, you can breathe into it with love, simply acknowledging that it's there. Acknowledge your body, and perhaps thank your body for being here with you. Think about it, friends. This is the only friend who will be with you from start to finish in this adventure of living. It's your body. So love your body right now. Perhaps thank it. Breathe into it with love. And join us again next month here on Be Who Your Soul Wants You to Be.
Thanks for tuning in to Be Who Your Soul Wants You to Be with Lynn McGonigal, the founder and teaching channel of the Lightworkers Healing Method, and her wonderful guests. We're proud to be a part of the Dream Vision 7 Radio Network and glad to have you with us. Please join us every second Sunday at 6 p.m. and then come to lightworkersmethod.com for many freely shared learning resources. As we each do our part, the world transforms. And hasn't your soul already waited long enough?
The Massachusetts Soldiers Legacy Fund, MSLF, was founded in 2004 with a simple goal: to provide educational assistance grants to the children of Massachusetts service members who were killed while deployed on operations enduring and Iraqi freedom. With its current resources, the MSLF guarantees a minimum of $40,000, $10,000 per annum, in educational funding to each child of a fallen service member whose home of record at the Department of Defense was Massachusetts. There's no selection process. If an individual is a child of a service member whose service is credited to Massachusetts and whom gave his or her life in Operation Enduring or Iraqi Freedom, that child qualifies for MSLF funds. We're proud to report that we're accomplishing our founding objective thanks to the support of individuals and organizations throughout the United States. To donate, go to mslfund.org.
Bullying has no place in Massachusetts schools, and adults have the power to stop it. I'm Paul Toner, president of the Massachusetts Teachers Association. Bullying can cause decline in academic performance, physical illness, depression, or worse. Help us create safe, bully-free learning environments for all students. One caring adult can make the difference. Pledge to be that adult at nea.org/bullyfree.
A message from the Massachusetts Teachers Association.